Okay, for anybody who doesn't know me, I'm Paul Warren, and I'm Technical Director at Expert International. And in this presentation, I'd like to take you through the various initiatives we've got within Expert International for dealing with entity-specific disclosures. So first up, I'd just like to touch on terminology. Just go to the next slide. Okay, so we now have in Expert International, we actually have an XBRL glossary, which we are developing, which is, I think, a very useful resource if you haven't come across it already. And it does provide a definition for entity-specific disclosures, which is on screen now. I won't read it all out now, but the key point I'd like to take away from this is that entity-specific disclosures are not the same thing as taxonomies. Extensions and extension taxonomies are one specific way of dealing with the business problem, which is the need to make disclosures that are specific to an individual entity or a very small number of entities. So when it comes to looking at how we tackle entity-specific disclosures, in XBRL and in structured data more generally, I'm often reminded of the joke that has various different regional variations, but the thrust of it is that a weary traveller stops for directions and in response is told, well, if I were you, I wouldn't start from here. If you were coming at this problem afresh, with no existing accounting standards, without hundreds of years of practice, and trying to design a system that worked with structured data, this isn't where you'd start. We have to model what we've got. But fundamentally, wherever you've got entity-specific disclosures, they do hamper automated consumption and comparison. So we certainly do need the ability for entities to represent their own situations accurately. But we should also recognize that there's plenty of places where filers are doing different things, and there's probably no real need for that. It's just inconsistency because it's never been constrained in the past. And broadly, the reason for that is because whilst entity-specific disclosures create a lot of problems for structured data, they don't create any real problem for human consumers who are looking at a financial report. So on the next slide, I've got just a simple example. And if you just click a couple more times. Bring up all the bullet points. There are four bullet points. So just click another two times. There we go. Perfect. So in this example, we've got two line items that have been reported. This example, by the way, came up in the ESDTF discussions. I'm not sure if it's got a specific taxonomy in mind, but it's illustrative of the problem, where we've got a reporter who's reported amortization of non-operating intangibles and amortization of operating intangibles. Assume our base taxonomy defines a concept which is amortization of intangible assets. Preparers reported two things which aren't in the base. Presumably they'd have to use an extension. A human reader looking at this report can look at that and immediately say, okay, those two yellow items, those add up to the total that I've got, that I'm after, the amortization of intangible assets. But to an electronic consumer, it's actually very difficult to make that leap. And the ESDTF and other initiatives are looking at relatively complex mechanisms to communicate the fact that those two yellow items add up to an item that exists in the base taxonomy. And actually, I often listen to these discussions that go on for a long time and think, well, hang on, wouldn't the simplest thing be just to have them report that concept? What's the downside of explicitly reporting the concept that's not there? In an electronic world, we're not constrained by the size of the piece of paper or the ability to read the presentation at a glance. What's the downside of having the data there explicitly rather than looking at complicated mechanisms for inferring it? So just moving on from that, in the general case, there's, on the next slide, yep, thank you. At the very highest level, there's really three approaches to dealing with entity-specific disclosures. Don't tag them at all. Provide mechanisms in the taxonomy that allow you to tag them, but without using an extension taxonomy, and entity-specific extensions, extension taxonomies. And it's worth noting that these are not mutually exclusive options. You can use some combination. So just going through these in a little bit more detail, if we go on to the next slide. So don't tag. It has the advantage of being very, very simple. And it becomes a little bit more appealing if you're looking at iXBRL, inline XBRL, because you will always have the data there in HTML format if you want to refer to it. Obviously, it's not available in structure form. Now, this approach, it becomes a bit more viable if you're looking at a many-to-one environment. So versus what we've largely been talking about here, which is where you're receiving documents from many filers, taking them in as a regulator, and then republishing them to many potential consumers. If you contrast that with, say, HMRC in the UK, they've got many tax filers all filing into one tax agency, but they are the only consumer of the data. So it's entirely open for them to say, well, all this data that's not covered by the taxonomy, we weren't going to do anything with it anyway, so let's just not tag it. If they're republishing data to other consumers, really they can't speak on behalf of all the analysts and other consumers to say what is and isn't useful to them. Finally, you know, to what extent, where you're answering the question of whether you want it tagged or not, there's a corresponding question of what level of detail should be required. Do you want every single number in the document tagged, or would a block tag telling you where to find data relating to a particular disclosure be sufficient? So the second approach, generic structures, there's a number of different technical approaches that have been used and can be used for doing this, but they all follow a similar theme, which is you take a group of items in the taxonomy and you allow them to be repeated using some mechanism that, you know, for example, if you're looking at a segment disclosure or a geographical disclosure, you allow that set of rows to be repeated as many times as you need to meet your reporting requirement, and you have some generic mechanism for labeling what they mean, all using standard elements within the taxonomy. So what happens really is that you take the thing that you would use as the name on an extension concept, and that becomes a fact that's reported about a row in the table. And if you just go on to the next slide, we've got a very simple example of how this might work for a disclosure of revenues by product. If we just click through that to the next one. So that's the facts that were, the first column is the facts that are being disclosed on a concept called revenue. The names of your products become a second concept called product name, and those are then grouped and differentiated by a type dimension, which is an arbitrary identifier, the 1, 2, 3, an arbitrary identifier that allows you to distinguish the rows and just groups the product name with the product revenue. The key feature here is that the identifier for the rows is defined in the report and not the taxonomy. So we just look at the considerations for this approach on the next slide. Yep, one more. Thank you. So obviously it has the advantage that you can capture this data without the requirement for extension. But the flip side is that it can hinder comparison between filings in a time series. So if you use an extension taxonomy, filing guidance will typically require you to use the members consistently from one filing to the next. So iPhone sales will always be labeled consistently across periods. It's not really reasonable to expect people to have arbitrarily chosen integer identifiers used consistently across periods. So this can be a good approach if there's a good key for the rows. So if the data is in fact about other entities and you're identifying them using LEIs or something for which there is an obvious identifier available, then using type dimensions in this way can be a good way to avoid the need to introduce extensions. Otherwise, I think the approach taken here will be largely driven by the fact, the question of whether you're expecting extensions otherwise. If you've already bitten the bullet of accepting extensions, in many cases, allowing people to use extension taxonomies, extension elements, becomes much more viable. So the final approach three, is the ability for preparers to produce entity-specific extensions, which I think people in the room are generally familiar with. And on the next page, we've just got an example of what this would look like. The same table would look like done using an extension taxonomy. And if you just click on one more. Yep. So that column there is now modeled as a separate dimension, a product dimension. That dimension can come from the base taxonomy, but the members on it would typically be defined and labeled in the entities extension taxonomy. Just on next slide, please. Yeah, so obviously entity-specific extensions can be very flexible. Well, they are very flexible, possibly too flexible, as we were just talking about. If preparers are given the opportunity to do too many different things, it actually becomes very difficult to consume. Compared to not accepting extensions, not requiring extensions, extensions are pretty complex for preparers as well. Although, as I say, in an environment where you bite the bullet and say, okay, we're doing extension taxonomies, the incremental complexity of moving a specific table to use extensions is not big. So just moving on to the guidance that Expo International is working on. Historically, this is there's been very little in the way of standardized guidance for dealing with entity-specific disclosures. I think it's fair to say that practice that's evolved so far should be reevaluated in the light of inline XBRL, which I think changes some of the assumptions about how you would set about managing extension taxonomies. For example, in the absence of inline XBRL, there's a big question about how you get to a usable rendering of the data. So the SEC project in the XBRL world requires buyers to prepare that taxonomy, and well, I don't know if they require them to do so, but they do. They tailor their extension taxonomies to control how the data appears in the SEC's renderer, because that's the primary way that users will look at the data. In an inline XBRL world, you have the inline filing. So if users want to get the preparer's preferred presentation, they should use that. And indeed, tools allow you to navigate quickly from the data back to that original presentation. And so to some extent, that should remove the pressure on filers and the pressure on extension taxonomies to provide a mechanism for recreating that presentation in a standard rendering tool. So that potentially changes some of the requirements that you might have on how extension taxonomies are constructed. So just moving on to the next slide, we've got a number of initiatives within Expo International at the moment. We've got the ESDTF task force, which Lewis will talk about in just a moment. But we've also got a number of other mechanisms that we've got being developed by other task forces and working groups to address different aspects of the challenge of handling ESDTFs. I'll go through points 2 to 5 in a little bit more detail in a moment. Lewis, do you want to start off by talking through the work of the ESDTF?
So I'll keep this very high level. We've been, Andy and I co-chair this group, and we've been at this for how long now, Andy? A while? I'm just trying to pull you back in.
I mentioned that.
And, you know, we've reported to this group before, so you already have a general idea of some of the background. We are at a point now where we've got a document that is pretty close. I've been saying that for several weeks now, but it's pretty close. We've got a couple of holes we still need to fill. Where we've been with it as of late is focusing on the continuum of any specific disclosures and the different type of model taxonomy models that are out there. So we know we have some taxonomies that have a lot of flexibility, and we have some taxonomies that don't have a lot of flexibility, and then we have taxonomies that might be applied with a lot of flexibility and applied with a lot of constraint. And within all of that, it's important to understand that entity-specific disclosures, they exist in their own right. They're not a product of XBRL. They're a product of the accounting standard. That is something we should understand right from the get-go. What we're trying to do is find the best way to contain those within our, given our particular model choices. And so once we understand that, and then we understand the other constraints we might have around our taxonomy, whether it's a closed reporting system or an open reporting system, that tells us a lot about how we can contain those entity-specific disclosures most effectively. So, for example, some of the stuff Paul was talking about works more effectively in a closed reporting system where you're using, I think it was scenario two, the generic, is it the generic idea?
Yeah.
Which is the generic structure will tend to work most effectively in a closed reporting scenario. And it still could be effective in an open reporting scenario, but it's important to understand that in the context of your modeling, which other task forces will be looking at more deeply than we are. But from our perspective, we want to take those different choices and lay them out in the document, and that's what we've been doing. And then concluding around a couple of primary recommendations. The first is recognizing that inline XBRL is a very important piece of this that Paul has talked about. It gives you context that you didn't have before. The second piece of this is going to be a strong recommendation around the use of the calculation structure. We recognize that in some scenarios it doesn't work particularly well. But it is there. We understand it works really well in many cases, and we want to leverage that. And then finally, perhaps the most important piece for the recommendations will be speaking directly to anchoring and putting forward some recommendations around anchoring. I'm not going to tell you we have that absolutely nailed down at this moment, but it's this idea that any specific disclosure needs to be anchored, whether that is to the nearest similar concept or to the parent. Our preference is for the parent. And then it needs to use some kind of agreed-upon mechanism. And we haven't quite decided on that. That, frankly, has seemed a little secondary to us. It's more important that we agree on where the relationship is established, and then we can lay out the other details. But that's pretty much where we are with it at the moment. Most of what we have left is a lot of wordsmithing and finishing off the document. Paul?
Thanks, Lewis. So I'll just quickly run through these other mechanisms. This calculation mechanism is something that's come up a few times today, certainly came up in our breakout session before lunch. As I think most people are only too familiar, the calculations that exist currently are very limited. They don't work across dimensions, they don't work across periods. But another issue that's come up, and it's come up in the ESDTF, is the issue that they're tied to inconsistency reporting. So the facts in your document don't add up. According to the relationships described in the calculation tree, you get inconsistencies, and filers don't like that. Indeed, some regulators won't accept it in that state. But it does create an interesting problem, because it means that extension elements are often tied back to the nearest reported fact as opposed to the nearest fact in the taxonomy. And often that second point, the nearest concept in the taxonomy is actually the more interesting thing, the more useful thing to consumers. If a preparer is omitting a particular subtotal and instead providing the components of it, knowing that they are the components of that subtotal rather than the thing that subtotal rolls up into, that's useful information. So that's an issue that's created by the fact that it's tied to inconsistency reporting. So the BaseSpec working group is just starting to look at possible solutions to this. Fixing the first two of these would actually be relatively straightforward. We could create something that worked like the calculation mechanism that exists today, just worked across dimensions, worked across periods. But actually, we want to do a bit better than that, make it more useful, and make it more useful in terms of documenting relationships and how they relate to concepts in a Bayes taxonomy. The next item, text tags and IXBRL. This comes back to what I was saying about the need to adapt practice in the light of the fact we've got the IXBRL document, we've got a structured HTML document that's got links between the facts that are being disclosed and the place that they were disclosed in the original presentation. So web projects at the moment use block tags and create facts with HTML in them. I think actually we should look at a different approach, which allows people to mark up sections of the inline XBRL document. It means that the extracted XBRL document will contain just the text, but if you want to look at that text laid out properly, you can do that by linking back into the inline XBRL, and that actually gives you then an interactive view of that text block, because you've still got the facts inside it. If there are there's detailed tags or embedded tables, you can actually get to those facts, which you can't do if all you've got is escaped HTML. So guidance on that point is currently under discussion within the implementation guidance task force. The next item I wanted to mention was guidance on the extent of Bayes taxonomy reuse, and I've already touched upon this. The SEC project assumes that you don't use anything except the concepts, although that is changing. An inline XBRL potentially changes that. So we're looking at providing some guidance on that. There's an early draft of that within the implementation guidance task force. And finally, the final item I wanted to highlight was guidance around generic structures or open tables, open tables as they're being referred to. Guidance about how those should be adopted, and a lot of it hinges on how you select the identifiers for the row and what makes a good identifier, and where such identifiers are as good as having something in the extension taxonomy, or where actually if you've got extension taxonomy as an extended member in that entity-specific member in that taxonomy would actually be preferable. That guidance is reasonably advanced now and should be being published relatively soon by the taxonomy architecture group, we've got as many task forces as we have bits of documentation being produced, which I'd like to think led to significant efficiencies and parallelization. I'm not sure that's actually happening. With that, any questions?
Start science. So that's a sign of very, very good work.
Okay, and you're behind you.
just one question with broad implications. Any indicative timelines on the in particular the things which relate to calculations in the base spec and anchoring?
Base spec calculation stuff is very early. I'd like to think that actually the solutions aren't too complicated and we can move forward fairly quickly with just hopefully a set of different link roles. It might be more than that. I always hesitate to put timelines on it because I'm always so wrong with anything that's related to spec processes. But I like to think we'd have a draft of something in the next few months. Sorry, the other one was?
Your second half of your question.
Sorry, second one was anchoring.
Which is, I'll look at the lowest point to be there.
I'd like to say that if we, you know, how you get at a project where if you just had a week or two where you could do nothing else but that? That's kind of where we are. Unfortunately, we don't have a week or two. We can do nothing else but that. But I feel like we're pretty close. So it's just some holes we need to fill in, and we keep plugging away at it. So getting close. And any volunteers to write?
Chief, you had a question?
Yeah, but the extension which you mentioned in this presentation is only, if my understanding is correct, is only extend on the main parts. It's not about extending existing elements. I mean, from slide, slide number 12, extension. This example is, I think it's only about the member, extend member.
So which slide?
Page 12.
Page 12, the extensions example.
Yeah. So in this slide, extension which you mentioned is only about the extend member, not only extend element.
So this particular example is just extending a member, but the guidance on the topic as a whole covers all possible extensions that might be needed.
Two done.
So the members is, I think that basically members are usually is extend like a segment. So the maybe extension which is created as an element must be, you know, the people discussing about.
You mean a new primary line item?
Yeah.
So I think. Broadly, the challenge is the same. You want those concepts or members, whatever they are, to be anchored so that it's clear what the nearest thing in the base taxonomy is that they relate to.
But it's some extension was created, or is that any relation between another element from standard taxonomy sometimes?
So that's what we're working to avoid, is that extension should always have some relationship to something in the base taxonomy.
Yeah, hopefully, but sometimes company make extension from the top of the primary financial statement. Just only the reason why, the only reason I don't like this name, or something happened like this.
That's just bad practice.
Yeah, of course. Nothing perfect solution, but today's presentation, there is no such kind of anchor or solutions.
Well, for that?
Today's pause. Is
at that high level? So if somebody chooses to extend revenue as an example?
Yeah, there are many types of the extensions happened.
Yeah.
But today's presentation doesn't include it.
Yeah, I mean, the examples that were included in here didn't, I guess it doesn't speak to that directly, but we did talk, the example that Paul had towards the beginning was getting to that. So that was the example with amortization of non-operating intangibles. It was just a more common scenario. Those are line item extensions, and the things that we are working on there in terms of proposals would speak to something like even a revenue type extension, right? So it's about anchoring it to, you know, its most common item from the base taxonomy or the parent in the base taxonomy, something along those lines. The examples that he was going through with dimensions was really intended to illustrate a different modeling pattern that works with different types of disclosures and helps to contain any specific disclosures in those scenarios.
And sometimes we found that some extension which is the reason why the company extended this line item because they wanted to reduce some certain numbers. Did you find such kind of cases?
I didn't.
For example, the company wanted to highlight it some kind of line item, so that some more subtotal sometimes has to reduce some specific.
So they extended so that it would be more visible?
Sometimes it's not visible. Yeah, that's also another problem. But some cases, the extension Anyway, there are many, many cases.
They are creative.
Yeah. So today's presentation doesn't include such cases.
I agree, Chi, and if I may, and Louis, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the things that the task force looked as well is, okay, there are different kinds of extensions and a different kind of extension problem. There's, for instance, and to solve it, it probably requires different solutions. Like, for instance, definitely there is wrong tagging. Wrong tagging cannot be solved by any technology you throw at it. That's really to better practices, better guidelines, better filing rules, etc. So that's one type of an extension which should not be an extension in the first place. Then when you really looked at other extensions, yeah, and we're talking here again at extension as one of the possible solutions for entity-specific disclosures, really say, okay, even when you look at entity-specific disclosure, you can have different types of entity-specific disclosure. You can have an entity-specific disclosure which sits really high up at tree of a taxonomy. That could be a subtotal that is reported on the primary financial statement, and in fact, the majority of the other disclosures within the financial statement rolls up as components to that subtotal. In the past, we have called that subtotals, we have called that the combinations, aggregations. Now you have another thing, is a disaggregation. Now I think the disaggregation is where you provide more information about a particular disclosure. Now then, that particular disclosure could be modeled in your taxonomy as either a line item or a member. Now for the concept of more disaggregation or a further analysis of something that exists in a taxonomy, I think anchoring can work very well. And I think we had lots of feedback, like Jim highlighted this morning as well, that I think is something that investors really would be looking for. For this idea of these high-level subtotals, high-level aggregations, maybe anchoring is not the complete right solution, and maybe a better use of the calculation link base, if we overcome some of the shortcomings that exist with the calculation link base, may work better. So yes, there are different reasons for extensions, and there are different solutions to handle extensions. My all focus of the task force has been very much on this further analysis of something you know about that exists in the base taxonomy element.
So today's case is... Maybe Lisa, also you wanted to send them. So in this case, it is extension which is somebody's children, like this case.
Sorry, Chi?
Today's presentation is talking about extension which is created because of some other element, children.
It's like a third analysis of something that you know about.
Well, those are the examples we called out here. I think.
I think it would be very worthwhile to review the examples that the ESDTF has worked through, because they've worked through an awful lot of them and attempted to classify them, and see if the cases that you're concerned about, see if they've been addressed by any of the examples we've got there.
I saw your card up. You're okay?
No,
sure.
Okay.
I think that's it. No other questions. So, thanks, Paul. We're up for about a 15-minute break, so 25 past. Thanks, everyone.